For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now on the Believe Network. Great to be with them. And joining me is a prominent Rockets Twitter presence. You know him as Mitty. He's at Mitty Rockets on X. Great to see you, Mitty. And are you in Rockets withdrawal right now or just enjoying the playoffs too much to miss the Rockets?
It's a well-needed break, but honestly, I'm, and this is kind of how I felt last year, where you have so many moving pieces that you want to see how this new team does with, you know, like Alpi, Jalen, Jabari, Tari, and, you know, seeing them grow. But I'm just enjoying the vacation for right now and just working.
It's a lot of fun to watch the other teams and see, you know, where they are compared to where the Rockets are, where you feel like the Rockets are going also. One thing every Rockets fan is trying to see is an improvement from year to year. And you know, Ime Udoka and the organization went into this past year looking at where they could get better statistically, Mitty. And you've studied this. What major metrics did the Rockets improve on under Udoka this past season?
So I want to first ask you, before I go into, what do you think, at least one of the metrics are, what do you think one of the metrics are?
Well, the big one that, you know, was talked about throughout the year was transition defense. That's obvious, you know, that happened a lot because I think Fred VanVleet, you know, a lot of stuff that Fred VanVleet did, Rockets fans might not get. They might not see it sort of in the background, but that was a big one, transition defense. And offensively, that's something I'm kind of curious what you think and what other sort of statistics did you like?
So I could go over like the how you know, what do we need to improve on for next season, but we could get to that later. But yeah, for this, from the last Silas year to this year, like you said, it's just defense. And the biggest defensive metric, transition defense. And I'll just tell you all the metrics right now, and I'll go into explain it. Specifically for defense, the overall defensive rating went from the 29th best to the 10th best. So pretty big improvement. And just an overall defensive improvement. But then transition defense, like you said, we went from the worst, 30th. We were dead last in transition defense. And now we're the fourth best transition defense team in the league. And I can get to that later about, you know, like why that is so important for an up and coming team and, you know, why some teams have actually, you know, they're still failing on defense. Their defense numbers are up. Their transition defenses are not that great, but they still fail in the playoffs. And I'll get to that later. Second or third pick and roll defense. We were the worst pick and roll defense team in the league. Obviously, we're not as good as in transition defense, but we went from 30th to 15th. So like Alpi's biggest flaw, I would say, maybe is pick and roll defense. He struggles on that a little bit, but going from 30th to 15th while him having most, he encompasses almost 50 or 60% of all pick and roll plays as the defender, as the main defender. So just going from 30th, dead last to medium is phenomenal. And then he's going to get much better about that as well. Fourth, rim protection defense. And I just posted a tweet about this. I think we were about 25th in rim protection defense. Opponents scored about like 70% on us on the rim, which is insane. This year, we're about eighth year. So we made a lot of improvement. And that's big because people say, you know, Alby's not a rim protector, and he is not. But you can form a defense with him at the five that is a great defense and a great transition defense, a good pick and roll defense, and a great rim protection defense as well. So, and this is just the beginning. All these metrics are going to improve. And then I can also get into the offense as well. So offensively, I have a lot of quarrel with how we ran our offense and kind of, and I'll get into all of that, but the best thing to come out of the offense was probably the pick and roll. So despite being a very high usage in the pick and roll, people said it was inefficient. People said it was just a one trick pony, and kind of is, but we went from 28th in the style this year to 11th this year in pick and roll, total pick and roll offense. So it's pretty good. And I think we were fourth in usage. So we used it a lot, and we're still pretty efficient comparatively to the rest of the NBA.
I think the big thing in the pick and roll offense, when I think about that, is how great Van Vliet and Şengün were, especially in the first, I would say, half of the season pre-All-Star break. And then, you know, you talked about defensively and where they went. And I'm just curious what you think, because the defense was top four or five for the first half of the season, really. And then the Rockets decided to speed up the pace a little bit, and then they slowly sort of dropped. I mean, one thing that didn't help was Dylan Brooks's inconsistency in the second half of the season. Van Vliet had a spell where, you know, he was injured, and so he wasn't performing as well. But what do you think about the Rockets going forward defensively? Is this something that they can even get better at because now they're more familiar with each other? Or if the way to unlock the team a little bit, we saw them play a little bit better offensively, was to improve the pace, does that start to sort of bring down the defense a little bit? Is it harder to keep up that type of defense when you're trying to speed up the pace as much as they were?
One of the things that actually we were missing that truly showed was Tari Eason. So Tari Eason is probably the defensive or the piece on defense that we don't have anywhere except for maybe Amen Thompson. Our defense can be good with Amen Thompson, but with Tari Eason is one of our weak side rim protectors. When Tari Eason went out, Jabari had to be that weak side rim protection, and he wasn't that great at it, but he stepped up and he's improving. He's only 20 years old, but Tari Eason was that main piece. Now, in terms of improving defense for, you know, for the future, the pace is definitely going to, you know, if we want to increase pace, defense absolutely will struggle. A big reason why, you know, our defense was actually pretty good with Alpi in and then with Alpi out, because our defense was actually pretty good post All-Star break with Alpi. Once we lost them, pace actually decreased, defense decreased, offense stayed around the same. And he was a big component of that. Jabari rebounds very well because Alpi's the one boxing out. Defensive rebounds are a big portion of that. And the way they play defense isn't this drop coverage where they depend on a rim protector. The way they play is, you know, they use their perimeter guards and they get in front of their opponents, and they're able to stop the people going in with their point of attack. Mm-hmm. A big portion of that is also Alpi. We're one of the best rim protection teams, and that's because it wasn't just Alpi protecting the rim, but the way that the defense was set up. So just having those two back, Tari and Alpi, and then I think we're going to get Steven Adams as well to uplift the second unit.
Yeah, and when you talk about defense, Steven Adams and Tari Eason, it's not just the way they play defense, but rebounding. If you're getting, you know, if you're getting the rebounds, you're not giving up second chance points, then that's going to be big too.
Exactly.
You're saying the pace actually went or wasn't as much in the second half of this, because I think the whole thing was that he was saying that he was trying to pick up the pace, and that was a part of it the second half of the season or post All-Star break. You know, how do you think pace affects, you know, where they're going to be defensively? I mean, you account for that in the analytics that, okay, the pace is but you know, it's points per possession and that sort of thing. But do you feel like that does have an effect as far as like the total defense? Because now you're asking the team to, you know, be a lot better defensively and more detailed as they're maybe more tired because they're running more and stuff like that.
Udoka said it. His defense wants to come from the perimeter, his perimeter guards, his point of attack. So those guys are going to get exhausted. Our good friend Frank also mentioned that we were playing a playoff type of defense for most of the year, and people got gassed, people got, you know, exhausted. And then when you add pace to that, and when you don't have a big body kind of in the paint, whether it's going to be Steven Adams, whether it's Alpi, you saw in the second half of the season, people get, I mean, the defense struggled, but the offense was, well, mostly because of Jalen. The defense was actually pretty stable until Alpi got injured. After that, pace fell a little bit and defense fell a little bit as well. So for everyone to come back and kind of have this like synergy among the bigs and the guards, even if we increase pace, I think just having that depth in the bench with Steven Adams, and I think we probably should get another center, but then maybe even getting some point of attack defenders as in the guards, in the wings as well. We're going to get Tari Eason back, and Almond's going to improve. Cam's going to improve. We're looking at increasing pace and our defense being improving as well, but only one way to find out. But I'm pretty optimistic that way.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, we teased it off the top. I think what everybody cares about is, how do you get better next season? Where can they improve, Mitty? What do they need to do to get better?
Well, defensively, I'm not going to go into that too in depth, but I want to ask you offensively, what do you think, and I you're going to get this one right, but what's one thing offensively they need to improve? What's another thing offensively they need to improve?
Everybody keeps saying shooting. Shooting is the big thing for the Rockets, mm-hmm. but I would say even more important than shooting is this team was, it just never felt like they were great at finishing around the basket. The Rockets have got to get better at that. Jabari Smith, for one, has got to get better at finishing around the basket. Jalen Green, we saw some improvement in that run in March, but he's got to have that kind of finishing the whole season. You know, he's been terrible at finishing around the basket except for March, and that was it. So that's got to get better for him. Amen Thompson, you know, I mean, yeah, when he dunks, it's great. But, you know, he's got to be able to figure out a way to make layups or get it in when he's 3 to 5 feet away from the basket. That's something that he's going to have to get better at. Tari Eason, we know, has had his issues finishing around the basket. So to me, that's something that I want to see all these guys get better at. Some of that is just age and experience. Young guys have a bigger issue because you're used to not having the athletes that you would have in the NBA when you're going through college or the G League or wherever else. But that's the big thing for me.
Absolutely. So you, he's definitely shooting. And then you also touched on being able to finish at the rim. That's a big component of what I'm about to say. So I'll just list these stats out first for shooting. Effective field goal percentage. And that's basically field goal percentage with emphasis on the 3 points, on the 3-pointer, but also taking account drives and 2-pointers. So it's a good overall way to judge that. We were ranked bottom fourth on that. So bottom fourth in effective field goal percentage, being able to finish anywhere. Our 3-point percentage, we ranked 23rd. This should tell you that we still were able to shoot a little bit better than we finished at the rim. But if we want to be able to win, we need to finish at the rim. And we also need to be able to, you know, shoot well. Catch and shoot, we ranked 25th. That's about bottom six. It's not good either. So given all these shooting statistics, we were ranked 10th in open shot percentage in the NBA. So we were open 10th most in the NBA. So we were getting the open shots. We were finding the open shots, but we were not converting on those. And the second portion, what I want to talk about, is ball movement. We were terrible. We were terrible moving the ball. And we were terrible finding the open man. We were third worst in passes per possession. That means we just weren't moving the ball around compared to other teams. We were second worst in assists per possession. So that's assist percentage. Being second worst when you have, you know, Alpi and Fred VanVleet is not an excuse. You need to be able to move the ball. A lot of that also comes from people just being stagnant when someone has the ball, when the primary ball ender has the ball. They depended on the Alpi and Fred VanVleet pick and roll for too long, or just the Jalen Green and Alpi handoff. All those other people were just sitting in the corners, kind of just waiting. And then we were also fourth worst in touches per possession. So people just weren't touching the ball. People weren't passing it. People were just kind of like, if you just watch clips from last season, people are just, you know, waiting in the corners, just waiting to get fed or whatever. So I think we'll improve on that, but that's probably one of the worst I've seen with ball movement.
Yeah, the big thing when I look at ball movement with this team is I don't feel like Udoka has implemented some of the stuff that he wants to that would lead to ball movement, because he was trying to give them the basics. And he even said something about that during the season.
Yep.
But the other part about it is with ball movement, it helps when you've got more shooters on the floor. The ball is easier to move when teams have to space out and the Rockets, you know, don't have that threat. And so some of these guys are just going to have to get better at it. And if they don't, they're going to have to get better at cutting and moving and doing things quicker. And when they had the most success this year, when they looked the best, Mitty, it was that stretch in March. And the ball just seemed to fly around and guys were moving nonstop. And, you know, it wasn't dribble the ball up the court and everybody look at each other like we've seen most of the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, that stretch was really impressive. I mean, I remember specifically watching a couple of those games, like against Sacramento and Oklahoma City, where I was like, where has this been all along from these guys?
Exactly. It was so fun to watch. What Ime did was he depended heavily on Jalen and Alpe to take us to the homeland. Also Fred VanVleet, but he never gave that usage away from Jalen. Jalen's usage has always been consistent the entire season. He never changed it. So it was around like 27-28%. Alpe's was around the same, about 26-27%. And Alpe kept getting double teamed. Jalen kept getting double teamed, but Alpe was, I think, the fourth most in terms of in NBA players with the most post-up double team. So people were committing on him and forcing us to beat them with the three-pointer shooting, and we were not able to do that. So teams got whatever they wanted, basically, against us.
Yeah, the thing about this team offensively is, you know, they're young. And you can debate whether, okay, we need this guy to do more, this guy to do more, whatever. It's just guys getting experience. That's a big part of it on the offensive end. Same defensively, but even more so offensively, because I just feel like, you know, some of these guys, you know, they're not used to the NBA and what you're going to see from defenses and stuff like that. So they're still thinking about it and stuff like that. When the thinking starts to lessen and the reacting is happening, then that's when it really starts to get better. And we talked about offense, Mitty, but fans get infatuated with offense over defense a lot of the time. But why was it so important, do you think, for Udoka to start off with a defensive culture as opposed to an offensive culture? To me, it's pretty easy. Watch the playoffs right now, because, you know, the teams that are having success are doing it on the defensive, and the game slows down and it becomes a real wrestling match. And the Rockets, to be prepared for that, need to get to that defensive point so they can compete with these teams in the playoffs.
Exactly. So I'll say this, players, in terms of just players, judging how impactful a player is and also how important a player is to a team, and judging by just salaries, offensively gifted players are more, make more money and they're more valued than defensive players. You're not going to see many defensive player of the years get, unless they also have an offensive bag, but you're not going to see them get like a max contract or super maxes that much. But in terms of team defenses, team defense and offense are just one and one. Like and maybe even a little bit more on defensive side, you need a great defense first, and you need to start with that culture. And it's also just easier to have a great defense than have a great offense. I mean, if you look at us, right, we had just a bunch of ragtag groups, scrappy players, I would say, who didn't really fit with each other, because we came into the season not knowing how they would fit. We didn't experiment enough in the Silas years. So it was all just, you know, Ime came in from Boston, where he ranked first in defensive rating. He came in here and made Houston a top five defense for most of the year, but then it ended up being top 10. So let's just talk about the teams that didn't start with a great defensive culture. Three teams come to mind: the Sacramento Kings with Sabonis, the Denver Nuggets with Jokic, and the Philadelphia 76ers with Embiid. And I'll talk more about the 76ers with Embiid. They had a decent defense, but one thing was lacking. So with the Sacramento Kings, Sabonis and Fox, they were the number one best offense in the league at the time last year. They're one of the best offense. They were the best offense, but guess what happened? They got bounced out in the first round of the playoffs. A big part of that was they couldn't stop the Warriors from penetrating and constantly beating on Sabonis. Sabonis needs a rim protector. He does. And the team defense was not set, but they focused so heavily on their offense, they completely forgot about their defense. But opponents were just slashing on him at will. The Denver Nuggets with Jokic, before they actually got their defense together, their main goal was just get Jokic the ball and let's see what we can do with them. They played drop coverage with Jokic. They didn't play the hedge system that they have, the system where kind of you see these Denver Nuggets as like one, like almost like this one organism. Around 2018, 2019 is when they implemented more of like a hedge system where they played more as a team and they didn't rely on Jokic to be their rim protector. Which is kind of what the Rockets did this year as well.
And then also you have two teams right there. You just name it. Have these centers that have some physical limitations defensively, yeah. And they can't be the hub of your defense. So it really, you know, it's much more difficult to build a defense around those guys because the other guys have to sort of make up for it in a lot of ways. And, you know, that's what people are trying to figure out. How much is that going to be the case with Shangoon? So it's good that you mentioned those two teams because they got similar, you know, centers and Jokic and Sabonis.
Exactly. See, the thing was Jokic was able to figure out on defensively. They're one of the best. And this year, I think they're sixth in rim protection. So they figured it out. And they have Peyton Watson, too, who plays great at the four, Aaron Gordon. So you can get it to work. You just have to build the team correctly. I think Shangoon's offensive skill set is too hard to ignore. You cannot ignore that. You can't just throw away for another, you know, defensive big. You can have that on the roster, but if you have a talent as Shangoon, I think you should definitely try to build a defense around that. And I think it is a little bit easier to build a great defense than a great offense, but they are worth the same. And then also the Sixers with Embiid,
yeah.
They were actually a decent defense because it was Ben Simmons and Embiid towards like in the post. They had a decent defense, but they were one of the worst transition defenses in the league. Their perimeter defense was not great. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they were good defenders in the front court, but they lacked the wings and they lacked the guards to have good perimeter defense. And that's kind of the reason why they were not as successful. 2020, 2021. Embiid also struggled with a lot of injury issues, but their defense was not set. And I think that's why I also think why Udoka's years ahead of everybody on this is his defense first starts from his perimeter defense, and then he builds a team defense around that. And, you know, first year in Houston with just a ragtag group, he's 10th in defense. So I think that's important.
Yeah. Let's flip it to the offense because, you know, Udoka, you might not have known much about him if you weren't watching all the Celtics games a couple of years ago. What have you learned about him as an offensive mind, both this year and going back to his Boston Celtic days?
In his Boston Celtics days, it was his first year there and he kind of struggled a little bit. He made the players buy in defensively, but also offensively to what they're doing. But he started out very simple. He utilized his star players. So he had players like Jason Tatum, who actually had a little bit of playmaking to him that a lot of people didn't realize, I would say. But he basically turned Jason Tatum into this almost this isolation pick and roll savant guy and had everyone do a five out offense, except for maybe when Al Horford and Robert Williams shared the floor together. But he was just driving and kicking, and they were the best shooting team in the league. So they were able to capitalize. Let's say we had the best shooting team, we would be able to capitalize as well because all they did was just kick and shoot out. That's kind of what OKC is doing right now. They do have a lot of movement and they have a really good defense, but their offense is a lot of catch and shoot, catch and shoot, catch and shoot. So, you know, we'll see about that. Udoka also adjusted to his player skill sets versus Silas, who forced something on them. Silas forced them to play some sort of this, it was a react and play type of offense that he was trying to create. Udoka, on the other hand, learned how valuable Alpi was, learned how valuable Fred was, and then also tried to up-level Jalen into like playing to the star that he should be or he should be playing at. So that's one thing. Another thing is that I almost guarantee, if Udoka had one more year in Boston, they would have figured out their offense. They were already seventh in offensive rating, but they played against the Warriors team that was just deadly. There's nothing you could do about them. Steph Curry just went berserk. But if he had one more year, they would have figured that out because everything tanked the next year. They weren't as good. I think I'm very hopeful for Udoka. A lot of people said that he would not be able to, you know, sustain his offense or be able to be creative offensively. I did too. But like you said before in this podcast, he's doing it on purpose. He wants the team to learn how to play together. And hence why I also said it's easier to get the team to move as one versus move as with the ball. So it's easier to get a good team defense over team offense. The team offense will come as they play together, but we'll just have to see in the future.
All right, let's talk about some sort of fun stuff. There was a rumor out there, and I'll preface this rumor with, if you listen to Paul George's podcast, you've heard him be very complimentary of some Rockets players. There was a report that George might opt in the last year of his contract for the purpose of a trade. So maybe Paul would be interested in coming to play with a couple of those guys that he seems to like on his show. The Rockets got brought up in, I think it was Scotto's inside report. Mitty Frank with Rockets Chop Shop said he would be interested in George if they'd only be given up Dylan Brooks and Filler in this sort of sign and trade 1 year option type deal. What do you think?
If that's the case, yes. If all it takes is Dylan Brooks and a couple of fillers, that's 100% something I would take. The main issue that I have is it's just going to cost too much. I've seen a lot of times where Cam Whitmore was thrown into that package you mentioned, or I'm afraid we might have to give up one of the core six, which I don't think we would realistically. But if it costs more than, you know, just adding one of the core six, then I'm not for it. But
what about draft choices? Would you give up those?
I would definitely consider it. if it takes two, I would be hesitant on three, but if it takes two, then yes. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens, maybe, and I don't know how the sign and trade happens on a draft night deal. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, if you can sign and trade a player, but if you can sign and trade a player, I would be very leaning towards something happening on draft night, but I would be down for Paul George. I'm just worried about his cost, and I think so is the rest of the NBA.
Would you be willing to give up the two picks without a guarantee that George was going to sign some sort of an extension with the Rockets, or what would you want George to do once they make the trade? Do you want a max extension, or, you know, what would be palatable for you?
If it's just 2 years, we could potentially. I think he said max extension, but he said that to the Clippers. I feel like he's willing to stretch his wings out a little bit and see what other people offer him. But I would want a guarantee, because it otherwise that's something that could, him not agreeing to, you know, re-sign is something that could potentially, after you've given up two draft picks and Dylan Brooks, and I mean, Dylan Brooks is on a bad contract right now, as of right now, but those two draft picks are pretty useful. So that 1 year of just Paul George and him not signing an extension would be pretty detrimental.
Yeah, I'd probably give up that first round pick this year if it doesn't fall in the top four. And frankly, I don't know if it even matters if it falls in the top four, because it seems like all these guys in the top 10 are about the same guy. So it's not a big difference, but I still would be willing to give up that first round pick if there was no guarantee on a contract extension. But yeah, if you give up anything more than this year, then I would say no dice on that. And I'm not somebody that thinks like Paul George is a number one on a championship team. He's a guy that's, you know, a two or three or something like that. So when you make that trade, you're hoping that Jalen or Şengün becomes the one, and you can, you know, have Paul George as sort of a Robin to his Batman or whatever. But
exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on it. And I'm going to throw another potential trade at you. And this one is not anything rumored, but I'm just watching what's going on in the playoffs, and it's becoming pretty obvious the Cavs could put Jared Allen on the trade market this offseason, with Mobley excelling as a center. And the Rockets fans would love to have a vertical spacing center like a Jared Allen. This is a guy that's been an all-star. We know Jared Allen's resume is pretty good. And I've just got this trade proposal with Allen: Dylan Brooks, Jock Landell, and a first-round pick swap. So basically, the Rockets would swap this pick that they have with the Cavs pick this year. So they would fall down to 20th in the first round. And you would be giving up Dylan Brooks, Jock Landell, and you would be getting back Jared Allen and George Niang. So the Cavs get a wing defender and a little defensive attitude with Dylan Brooks, along with a Mobley backup and Jock Landell. So they're not left high and dry as far as bigs are concerned. The Rockets get a vertical spacer and George Niang, you've got another 3-point option. How do you feel? How would you feel about something like that? Do you think the Cavs would be interested in something like that?
I think that's too much for the Cavs in terms of they're giving up, because I think George Niang is actually, and I think Cavs has been shooting pretty, not in the playoffs, but they were shooting well, pretty well before in the regular season. I think George Niang would definitely be, I don't know if they'd give up both Jared Allen and George Niang. From a Rockets perspective, it really depends on how Steven Adams is, because, well, then you could also have both of them, and you could trade both of them if you need to. I think we might be giving up too much for a player we don't need at the moment. If we can, I would look for maybe like a third stringer guy, a center that could probably take that position.
The point isn't just that you're getting Jared Allen, is you're getting off the Dylan Brooks contract. You're opening up room for Tari Eason and Amen Thompson to start or get into the starting lineup, you know, without ruffling Dylan Brooks' feathers, which everybody seems to be worried about if he were to go to the bench, if one of those guys you feel like is ready to start next year, which I think both of those guys should be starting next year if you're asking me. But the other part about that is, yeah, George Niang, you're giving up something. But, I mean, George Niang is still like, what is he, an 8th, 9th, 10th guy? Whereas, you know, if you're the Cavs, you know, moving Jared Allen for Dylan Brooks, you're hitting something that maybe helps out the whole team space-wise and all of that sort of stuff. It just depends on what they think of Dylan Brooks is, and if they think that he would be a help to them, and maybe they need some physicality. Maybe they need some attitude. You know, maybe that's something that they would consider because of all the reasons that Udoka wanted Dylan Brooks to bring him in. So that's my thinking on it. But, you know, it's hard to get into the Cavs' head on this thing.
Yeah. Dylan Brooks is definitely, the thing is, he viewed by NBA teams, I think he's on a bad contract. So we'd have to give up some assets to get rid of him. So getting rid of him is like, I love Dylan Brooks, but just for the contract purposes, he's getting paid too much and we need to be able to clear that cap space for later. I think it'd be tough for NBA teams to actually, you know, give up something of use for something of equal that we're giving up. So,
well, the sweetener is that first round pick swap. So they would jump into the top 10. They could, you know, they could play with that, get another piece to the puzzle for them. It's a little bit maybe better. I don't know, you know, with the draft, I don't know if that's much of a sweetener this year, but that's just an idea that I had because I do like Jared Allen a lot. And I do feel like, okay, his value with the Cavs is going down. So they're going to look to probably get rid of him, I would think. I mean, it just doesn't seem like him and Mobley work together well. It's not the two of them maybe, but just overall, it just doesn't work for spacing. It doesn't work for lineups for them. And they're trying to get as good as they can with Donovan Mitchell there, so they don't have to give up Donovan Mitchell. And I love Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
And I would say, oh, let's see if we can go after Donovan Mitchell. I kind of don't think that, you know, if Donovan Mitchell says, I want to get out of here, his next stop, he's going to be pushing for some places where he wants to go. And I don't know if the Rockets would fit into where he wants to go, but, you know, I don't know about you. I love Donovan Mitchell. I'd love to get my hands on him. And my real concern is that Amen Thompson as a point guard is a long, long project. So once Van Vliet's contract ends this next year, you know, there's an option, but we assume they're not going to exercise the option. Mm-hmm. Then you need a point guard. And Donovan Mitchell, to me right now, even though he's playing with Darius Garland, he should have the ball in his hands. He's a point guard right now. And I would love to get him because, you know, for the most part, his playoff career, with the exception of that Knicks series last year, has been great. I mean, he's a scorer in the playoffs. His percentages are good. This guy is a guy that can lead your offense, and he's never really had that guy next to him that can help him out in scoring. And if Şengün and Jalen Green develop, or, you know, Şengün and another one of the Rockets develop, then he might have another guy with him that can help him a little bit on the offensive side and that can complement him better than, you know, Rudy Gobert wasn't that guy, obviously.
I would love Mitchell. The problem is his price, which is probably the Cavs would probably ask, you know, what I think the Utah asked of Cleveland, which was kind of like an arm and a leg. So that's the issue there. Obviously, I mean, if Donovan Mitchell is available for the right price, you take him, no questions asked. But if it's a cost, an arm and a leg, I don't know about that. But I think
well, what if the cost is, I'm just going to throw out a couple of names, you know, so you might be giving up. And let's use Dylan Brooks again. You might be giving up Dylan Brooks, Cam Whitmore, maybe a couple of other filler guys, maybe a couple of the Brooklyn Nets picks. Would that be too much for you, or is that fair?
I mean, if it takes Dylan Brooks and Cam Whitmore and just like the Brooklyn picks, I'm leaning towards, you know, and if it's a sign and trade, or we'd be able to get like most of his years some way somehow, then yeah. I would do it. If it's Dylan Brooks, Cam Whitmore, but if it costs like Dylan Brooks, Cam Whitmore.
What if I had Jabari?
If you had Jabari, oh man, I might get killed, but I might do it. I might actually do that. That sounds like a good trade to me.
Yeah. I mean, you're hoping that Jabari's upside isn't going to be all-star level. And, you know, even if Cam Whitmore hits all-star level, you've got an all-star in Donovan Mitchell that's ready to go right now. But the odds that, you know, the odds are usually against guys turning into all-stars, and we can love Cam Whitmore all we want to, but the odds are still going to be stacked against any player becoming an all-star. And you know what Donovan Mitchell is. He's an all-star level player. And at times he looks like a top 10 guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, great stuff, Mitty. Thanks so much for doing this. It's at Mitty Rockets. Anything else that you're working on these days? Rockets, what, anything you're looking up, or, you know, you're going to put out any cool threads or anything like that?
I have some stats that I definitely do want to like post some threads on Twitter. I'm going to make a new addition to the website. I probably add some more, more specific metrics, offensively, defensively, scoring, creation, defense, impact metrics. I've been really really trying to focus on that. So yeah, we'll see. And then I have a couple of threads though that I do want to post, a couple of metrics that might surprise some people. I posted the rim protection one, that Houston was the 8th best rim protecting team in the league this year. I thought that was interesting. I didn't think we're that good, but the metrics tell you otherwise.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to remind everybody too that we just put up a Rudy T tribute, which we talked about his career. This is the 30th anniversary. If people haven't noticed yet, that's the 30th anniversary of Clutch City, the first championship. So figured it was a great time to look back at Rudy Tomjanovich's career. But also we include classic interviews that we've done over the years on the show with Calvin Murphy talking about Rudy and his 81 finals teammate, Robert Reed, Houston Sports Radio's Barry Warner, his biographer and Rockets beat writer in the 80s and the 90s, Robert Falkoff, Clutch City legend Chucky Brown, played on that great 95 team, Rockets fan favorite Moochie Norris, Chronicle reporter Dale Robertson. And also we have a couple of features that I did back in the day on Rudy T when I worked on at Channel 20, worked on the Rockets telecast. So definitely go check that out. If you're a Rockets fan, I mean, I can't imagine anybody not being a Rudy T fan if you're a real Rockets fan. I mean, this is one of the great coaches in NBA history and obviously won the 2 championships for the Rockets. But thanks again, Mitty, and we'll see everybody again soon.
Appreciate you, Robert.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.